Hey now, it's the Popmatic Podcast. It is May's Popmatic Podcast, and joining me today are
Bill
and Amanda,
Crystal,
and who else is here?
Clint is here.
Woohoo! Brian.
Today's show, we're going to talk about stuff about stuff. Now you're confused because we always talk about stuff.
I like stuff.
I'm going to explain the concept soon, but first, we're going to talk about some things that are happening at the library.
So we have this lovely series called The Salon at 6:15, and a bunch of author types come to town to talk about their books. So on Tuesday, May 7th, Augustine Burroughs is coming to talk about his book. You may know him from the number one New York Times bestseller, Running with Scissors, but that's not what he's going to talk about this time. He's coming to talk about his latest book, This Is How, Surviving What You Think You Can't. So if you feel like surviving, come and hear Augustine Burroughs on May 7th.
And, you know, the film version of Running with Scissors is coming out soon. Mm. I've seen previews for it.
So it's already been out.
It's already been out?
Yeah.
Maybe I saw a preview for
That's
it.
That's what I thought. I heard good things. But
it's been out a long time ago.
They come out last fall, right?
Maybe I saw a preview for it on a DVD.
I think that's
right. And I was confused. And I got confused, right?
I mean, Jill Clayburgh's already passed away. Over a year.
We're going to save this for the corrections for next month, okay? I got it wrong. I saw a preview on a DVD would I be watching them? Anyway, there's a movie version. I thought it was coming out, but I guess...
I've heard good things about it, so...
Preview on a DVD. But Bill's going to tell us about another movie.
Okay. Saturday, May 11th, 2013 at 2 p.m., come to the public library downtown and you'll take a trip to Middle Earth with Movies at Main as we present the ambitious animated film The Lord of the Rings, directed by Ralph Bakshi, famous for Fritz the Cat and Wizards. The Lord of the Rings proved to be a considerable influence on Peter Jackson's later movies based on Tolkien's novels. The chief style of animation Bakshi used in The Lord of the Rings is rotoscoping, a technique where animators trace over live-action footage frame by frame. Learn all about the film through our Legends of Film podcast interview with Ralph Bakshi. So I highly recommend you listen to this interview. It's one of our better interviews.
I agree.
It was a lot of fun to talk to, full of good stories. You will not be disappointed. Thank you.
Radical. And then
awesome.
Crystal's going to tell us about...
Summer's coming, right? And in library world, that means summer reading.
Ooh.
And the adults aren't off the hook. There's adult summer reading. So come and sign up for summer reading on Friday, May 31st from 11 to 1. And guess what? Gadgets don't bite. And we're going to show you how to sign up for summer reading on a cool gadget like an iPad, a Kindle Fire, or a Nook tablet. So don't forget, Friday, May 31st, 11 to 1. We're going to be singing and dancing too. Actually, we're not, but it's going to be a great
time.
I'm
there for singing and dancing. That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
If I have a lot of coffee, I'll dance around.
All right.
You will, people. This is true. there are prizes for summer reading, right?
There are. We haven't gotten
word what they are
on the
yet,
prizes.
But that's kind of part of the fun.
And there's usually a grand prize drawing for some sort of tablet or device. So,
especially if that's what our theme is, that would
indeed
be appropriate.
Cameo in the Veronica Mars movie.
Yeah,
that's right. See, thanks for Brian for getting Veronica Mars in. I didn't even have to do it this week.
That's not true. I just made that up.
But it would be fun.
Yeah. That's where's that at?
That's in Popular Materials.
That's our home.
The
come
most
see
important
us.
Detail. You're going to come hang out with us.
Which library?
At the main library, the first floor.
There's only one Popular Materials.
I bet people don't even know what that is. That doesn't matter to us.
If they listen to our podcast, they know.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Because they love us. All two of you.
I think it's up to three fans.
Yes. Yeah. Score.
Hey, Craig, this is a shout-out to you.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
People that used to be on the podcast, Jeremy and Julie and Jesse and Lisa, Karen.
Liz was on that one,
Liz,
too.
Jane. Mm.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Okay, so I teased you what this first segment is going to be about. And it's stuff about stuff, and it was inspired by a new documentary that's coming out called Room 237. Now, movie buffs know that Room 237 is the evil, scary room in Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. And what this documentary is, it's five different takes on what the movie Shining was about, because the movie The Shining is actually really complicated, has all these layers, so everyone has these different takes about what the movie is really about, and they read it as a puzzle. But interesting to us was, can a work about another work be good, right? Can a work that's just about another creative work be as good as that original creative work, or maybe even better? Did I explain that right? Does that make sense? Because Room 237, some of us anyway, were, I don't know if Amanda was, but Crystal and Bill and I think were excited that movie was going to come to town and at the Belcourt, of course. And we were just thinking, like, so what else could, how could we spin this, right, and turn this into a show? So here are some examples. And the first one I thought of was Nosferatu. You know, Fritz Lang's Nosferatu, or what is it Fritz Lang, was it?
Murnau.
Murnau. Clint will edit that so I don't make any more mistakes. but, you know, the movie came out, The Shadow of the Vampire, which was a fiction film about Nosferatu. And the library doesn't have Shadow of the Vampire anymore, but Nosferatu itself is probably a better movie. And I can link to a very, very high-quality version of it on archive.org. If you want a public domain movie, go look at archive.org. The versions that people post on YouTube are terrible. So, but another, I think, a really good example would be Fitzcarraldo and Burden of Dreams. So Fitzcarraldo was a film by Werner Herzog, where Klaus Kinski plays this gentleman in South America who's obsessed with opera and ends up, like, pulling a steamboat over a mountain, right? But then Les Blank, he's director, just recently died, made a documentary about the making of that movie, and I think that documentary is probably just as famous as the movie itself.
And better.
You know what? I'm going to disagree with you, because I always thought Burden of Dreams is overrated.
I think Fitzcarraldo is way overrated. Lower third.
It's not the
best. Fight.
It's not the best, but I never, other than Klaus Kinski is nuts, right? You know, and needs to be on medication. I don't really see what's that interesting about that movie.
And if you want to look at a film like that, I recommend My Best Fiend, which is highly entertaining. You get to see Klaus Kinski go nuts on Werner Herzog. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's the same. Well, exactly. I think that anyone could have made a 15-minute featurette about Klaus Kinski being nuts, and you still have all the same juice that's in Burden of Dreams. No disrespect to you, Mr. Blank. May you rest in peace. So that's an example of what we're talking about. So Bill's going to kick us off with?
Well, a little trivia. Here's some dialogue from a movie. Ralphie, no, I want an official Red Ryder carbine action 200-shot range model air rifle. Santa Claus, you'll shoot your eye out, kid, and pushes him down the sled. Of course, you know what that movie's from if you've seen it. It's A Christmas Story.
It's a good movie.
A Christmas Story has become a much-loved movie. Every Christmas time, TBS Network has a 24-hour marathon showing of the movie. A little extreme, if you ask me.
I watch all 24 hours.
Uh-huh. And in 2012, the film was selected for preservation in the National Film Registry for being a culturally, historically significant. Pretty good for a movie when it was released the weekend before Thanksgiving. It was critically ignored, and it was just a minor success. A Christmas Story was directed by Bob Clark. And Bob Clark is the topic of a new documentary that the library has just recently acquired. It's called Clark World. And Bob Clark is a director whose filmmaking career has been all over the place. He started making horror films, Death Dream, Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things, and the original Black Christmas. Then a revenge flick, Breaking Point, a very good Sherlock Holmes movie, Murder by Degree. He directed Jack Lemmon in Tribute. And then came Porky's and Porky's 2 the next day. Then he directed Baby Geniuses, Super Babies, Baby Geniuses 2, and Karate Dog. He even directed a movie in Nashville called Rhinestone, starring Sylvester Stallone and Dolly Parton, which, by the way, from what I heard, they had to scratch all the footage due to an early fall, so they couldn't match the trees from shot to shot. So the rest of the movie was filmed in California, from what I understood, and Stallone was a real jerk. So, but anyway, back to Clark World. But Clark World mainly deals with the Christmas story and Bob Clark himself. The one thing I really liked about Clark World, it deals with a filmmaker most of us know nothing about. Sure, you can find books and films and documentaries on Fellini, Altman, and Scorsese, but Clark World deals with a filmmaker who has made at least one film that has become a Yuletide favorite, and let's face it, a bit of a classic. I saw Christmas Story that Thanksgiving, that weekend. I remember it well because the theater was empty because all the kids had gone home from college. I was in college. And I remember the second time I watched it, I was over at a friend's house, and she loved the movie, absolutely loved it. And she said, gee, I wonder what other films this guy made. And I remember when I said Porky's, it was just like this dead silence. But you have to look at the point that if you didn't have Porky's, you wouldn't have A Christmas Story, because that movie was so successful he got the clout to make A Christmas Story. So I recommend Clark World. It's a touching film, you know, because people who talked about him, the actors, the actresses, his assistant directors, they seem to really like the man. And it's kind of a cheaply made film, but still it's worth a look at, especially if you're a fan of Christmas Story.
I got to put in here that Christmas Story is based on a novel by Gene Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were going to talk about, like, Nicholas Ray, maybe. Talked about Bob Clark.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Amanda, your turn.
All right. I did like Christmas Story after I got past the fact that my brother tried to ruin it for me by telling me that the kid shot his eye out at the end.
Oh, no.
But,
that is a good brother.
Yeah. Feel free to watch it because it's not exactly true. Okay. So for my segment, I have a little bit of a chicken or the egg conundrum for you. So being that I work at the library, I like authors, right? So the author I'm going to talk about actually had a very popular series of books called the Derek Storm series, which got him a TV show named after himself called Castle. Some of you may watch it on ABC. So because of the Derek Storm books, he got a second series, and he started working with Detective Kate Beckett in the NYPD. And, you know, of course, they have to have a film crew that follows them everywhere they go for documentarial purposes. So and then this TV show kind of spun off another series of Nikki Heat books, which is a character based on Detective Kate Beckett. And the first one of those is Heat Wave. Now, the good news is that you can get all of these items at Nashville Public Library. We have the Seasons of Castle. We have all four of the Nikki Heat books that have come out. And just recently, they've re-released three of the Derek Storm books as ebook forms, which you can also download from Nashville Public Library. So you can decide if you like Richard Castle, the TV star, or Richard Castle, the author. Now, I have to admit that Richard Castle is a fictional character, and he is played by Nathan Fillion of formerly Firefly fame, as well as Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place. But the fun thing I like about Castle is that Nathan Fillion, before he became an actor, was an English major in college, and I really feel, I may have said this before, I can't remember, I really feel like he's writing these books. Because if you look at the books, we have books in audio form, we have them in ebook form, we have them on print form. If you look at them, the author, it's Nathan Fillion's picture of, as Richard Castle. And so I feel like because he has this English background that he's writing these books. And I've only read the first one, and I must admit it wasn't a brainstormer. it was pretty much what you'd expect for a commercial release that ties into a TV show. But it was fun, and if you need a little light entertainment, it's an excellent crime drama. You can read it in about an hour and be happy. So check out Castle, download the Derek Storm books, check out the Nikki Heat books, And then let's see what Crystal gets to tell us about today.
All right. Now, so before Brian picks on me, are you going to ask Amanda a follow-up?
She totally blew my mind. Like, so there is a TV show about a imaginary author.
Yes.
And now there are books based on one of the characters in the TV show, but then the imaginary author in the TV show also has imaginary books now too.
Yes.
That are written or ghostwritten by the actor who plays the imaginary author.
I can't back up. The actor writing the books is just my theory.
Because they use his picture.
Because they use his picture. I mean, as Richard Castle, as the author. Like they said, I mean, the books don't really break character ever. But I just, knowing what I know about Nathan, I would think that he would at least be involved on some level in the writing of these books if this is kind of his hobby. But
I just want to say that was an amazing application of the concept of stuff about stuff.
See, I feel like I cheated a little bit because it's all fictional.
Yeah.
But...
And that was a setup for me to pick on Crystal. So what so what are you...
I do what I can.
What are you...
I'm feeling guilty already.
Because it's... Listen, I put it this way. It's hard to mess up on the Pop Daddy podcast.
We do have pretty low standards.
We're information experts.
That's right. So stuff about stuff, I must admit, what I'm going to tell you about doesn't exactly fit the category, but I will tell you about what I was going to talk about had my hold came in. It's Making Rumors, the inside story of the classic Fleetwood Mac album, written by the producer, Ken Kelly. My name's on the waiting list, so if you're a Fleetwood Mac fan or a music fan, I think it's going to be a great book. You should place your hold, too. But that's not what I'm going to talk about. The stuff about stuff I am going to talk about is a book called Salvation on Sand Mountain. Now, Sand Mountain is a small region in northeastern Alabama, and this book was written by Dennis Covington. He's a novelist, freelance journalist, a teacher, and most importantly, a lifelong Southerner. So he went to cover the trial of a guy called Glenn Summerford, and he was a preacher that was eventually convicted of attempting to murder his wife with rattlesnakes. So when he went to cover this trial, he found more than what he came for. It was just basically a story covering the events surrounding the court case. But one of the parishioners of Summerford's church invited him to a service, and he went, and he became so fascinated with this bizarre world of snake handling and strychnine drinking and speaking in tongues, holiness churches.
Sounds like a fun weekend.
Exactly. He spent more and more time with these people, bringing his family, and he really felt a kinship with these worshipers. And he himself, Covington, just a couple of generations down from the mountain, so to speak, himself. This book was published in 1995. It was a National Book Award finalist in the nonfiction category. And, of course, it's almost 20 years old now, but it reads as kind of a great time capsule of the history of this group of poor southern mountain people. And it's really fascinating if you're interested in the South, you live in the South, you've ever attended a small rural church. I think you'll enjoy it. And incidentally, this region is now dealing with the meth epidemic that so much of rural America is. So
instead of handling snakes, they do meth in
church. Yeah, they're cooking meth.
Yeah, so you can cook it in that bowl.
I feel the Holy Spirit.
That's right. But anyway, Salvation on Sand Mountain. Highly recommended.
Radical. So they made a movie about this, and that would be the stuff about stuff, right? No, I'm going to stop picking on you. Okay. So what I want to talk about, too, has a Kentucky connection.
Ah.
But it'll take a while for me to get there. So I wanted to talk about the 33 and a Third series, which is a nonfiction series that's about, like, one author will write about one album, and that's why it's called 33 and a Third, because that's the speed that the record spins. And so far, they've done 86 of them. The first one was about Dusty in Memphis, and I can't remember the author. I apologize. And the last one that just came out, number 86, was about Talking Heads' Fear of Music, written by Jonathan Lethem, who I've talked about a lot on the show. The record that I want to talk about in the accompanying 33 and a third volume is Throbbing Gristle's 20 Jazz Funk Greats. And Throbbing Gristle were a band in the late 70s that they started or have been accused of starting the genre of industrial music. Though I think that's somewhat misleading. They had their own record label called Industrial Records. But I think if you actually listen to their work and where they're coming from, it actually sounds more like John Cage and is like more inspired by, you know, those sort of avant-garde concepts than anything like Nine Inch Nails. So they weren't just a band. They were sort of an art troupe. So Throbbing Gristle was sort of this total project. So they were visual artists and they were filmmakers and they were performance artists. And, you know, they did everything themselves. DIY, they made their own instruments, they did their own packaging for all their records, they did the graphic design, the posters and everything. It was all part of like one big project. But one of their goals was they wanted to get out of the sort of art gallery scene and they wanted to get their art to other people. So they would put out records that were, I think, intentionally deceiving, and 20 Jazz Funk Greats was one of them. So it's one of those things that you would find in, it looked like one of those things that you would find in a cutout bin. So like on the cover of the record, they're just all like in really bad 70s leisure wear, standing on a beach. But the beach is actually a notorious suicide spot in England where people, like, it's sort of like the Golden Gate Bridge. Like, it's very beautiful when there's all this mist and white cliffs, but people have a tendency to jump off and commit suicide. So that's the cover of the record. It's also become one of their most popular records because of all their avant-garde experiments, it's actually the most accessible. There's, like, disco songs on there, and there's ambient songs that could be confused for Brian Eno. And then on the CD version, there is actually some live versions of tracks that I think sound like more like industrial music. People think of about industrial music like pounding beats and loud and noisy. And that's the version that the library has. So you can get all the stuff that they punked people with, the album called 20 Jazz Funk Greats, and then you can get some noisy stuff at the end of the record too, some live stuff. So the person that writes the 33 and a third volume is Drew Daniel. And Drew Daniel isn't just a music nerd, even though like sometimes just music nerds write really good entries in the 33 and a third series. Drew Daniel himself is a musician. He's half of the duo Matmos, who I'm not sure if the library has any Matmos records, but they have Bjork records. And Matmos was the backing band for Bjork on the Vespertine tour, and they're really highly regarded in themselves. Maybe I'll put some links. They just had, they did a lot of in-studio NPR stuff lately because they just put out a new record. And also, Drew Daniel is in Matmos, and he teaches English at Johns Hopkins, because even if you are a critically acclaimed musician who tours with Bjork, you still can't make enough money being a musician sometimes these days. So he has a day job. He's a teacher. So he wrote this book about the 33 and a third. And like the reason I wanted to feature this is because for me, it's worked the way the 33 and a third series should work. I love Throbbing Gristle's 20 Jazz Funk Greats, and I loved Drew Daniel's book about it. Now, I've read some 33 and a third series that I didn't like at all. I was like, you know, I don't get what this author is or their take on the album. But with Drew Daniel's take on 20 Jazz Funk Greats, I really, really liked it. So here's why. So he talks about being a teenager in Kentucky. He's from Kentucky. And how he stumbled upon once when he was exploring the forest with his friends, like a place where the county would grind up roadkill like into this big vat and then like
in Kentucky
and turn it into fertilizer, right? And he talked about how, you know, they made the mistake of actually looking down into this huge meat grinder, and he talked about how really, like, for him, like, being into punk music or as much punk music as he could get from Kentucky, that was like what discovering Throbbing Gristle was like, because it was like, it wasn't punk, it was totally different, and he couldn't figure out what it was. It was kind of disgusting and totally disorienting. And the thing about Throbbing Gristle, too, is they're sort of the avant-garde Fleetwood Mac. The band broke up because there was, like, you know, interrelationship drama inside the band. And he interviewed some of the band members for his 33 and a third entry. And when he interviewed them, old stuff that they never said before actually comes out. And it was like, wow, this is like the scoop of the year. So if you're a fan of Throbbing Gristle, it's like, this is just the perfect little book. And I think that's what when the 33 and a third series works, you know, I think that's how it's supposed to work. It's, you know, it's really supposed to increase your fandom. So 33 and a third series, 20 Jazz Funk Greats by Drew Daniel, 20 Jazz Funk Greats by Throbbing Gristle. Go for it. And I wanted to throw out there, too, at the end, can anyone think of one where the work that's about the original work is better than the original work? Well, I guess you gave one example, right? You thought The Burden of Dreams was better than Fritz Giraldo.
I had a documentary and I was going to talk about, but I hated the book. And I can't remember what the documentary is called. The book was The Stone Reader, I think. The documentary was really good, and the book was horrendous. Like, I don't know why this guy was so in love with tracking down this book that was out of print and he couldn't find, because it was, even Oprah wouldn't have liked it. It was horrible. It was just long.
So that was The Stone Reader?
The Stone Reader, I think, was the documentary. The book was like The Summer of Something, or Summer with Something.
Tip of my brain.
Yeah, it's like it's got three parts, and...
I'm trying to think of the author's name was...
It was some obscure Iowa writer's workshop.
Yeah,
Dahl.
It's like the only book he ever wrote.
Uh-huh. It'd be cool if On the Tip of My Brain was the title, so we can leave it at that.
Dahl Mossman.
That's his name.
The Summer of Stones? Was that the book?
Summer of Stones. I think so. Go Bill. That's why we keep him. He's smart like that.
This is why Wikipedia works.
Stones of Summer.
Stones of Summer.
Close.
I knew it was summer, and that's all I had, so... But yeah, the documentary was cool.
So what sparked this all off was the fact that there's this documentary about The Shining called Room 237, and we got to give love to the original, right? So just anyone's thoughts on The Shining?
Scary. I have actually seen it, though. So.
And you've only seen like three horror movies.
Yeah, I've seen this one and The Exorcist and like some other stupid ones that no one would talk about ever.
Ever?
You might, but...
So what do you think?
Well, I can't really formulate anything intelligent right now except to say that it's just something you got to see. I think even Amanda, who's not a horror fan, has seen it.
I'm kind of glad. I mean, I'm not a horror fan, but I'm kind of glad that I've seen it because I was watching Psych the other day, and they do an episode that rips off The Shining, which I was like, at least I got the reference because I've seen it.
There's so many cultural references that go back to that movie.
The way I always think of it, it's probably the most realistic ghost story ever filmed. You know, that's how I always kind of looked at it. One person kind of viewed it as a supernatural who's afraid of Virginia Woolf. So it's one I've always... I really loved it when it came out, and I always remember they were giving away tickets, one of the local radio stations. You had to call in, and I won. So I got to go, but I got to see it before everybody else in Nashville because I'd won the free tickets. But, yeah, I always remember going to and enjoying it. And there's always that big debate at the end because most people didn't like it. It's one of those strange films that I remember, like, it was successful. It was a successful movie, but it wasn't liked by Stephen King himself and a lot of King fans of the book, The Shining. But
so does the movie end different than the book?
Okay,
so
the book is almost apocalyptic, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to give anything away, but it just really is more apocalyptic at the end. Mm-hmm.
And that's my favorite part of the movie when they got to drive away.
It was more apocalyptic. I kept saying that, but I don't want to give it away if people haven't read the book.
And this fall, Stephen King will write a sequel to The Shining called
Dr. Sleep.
Dr. Sleep. But that's not coming out until October.
Yes,
it's a long way off. Mm-hmm. I personally love The Shining. I think it's great. You know.
Now, have you read the book?
Much like Amanda, I only read what I want to read.
It's a good rule.
And therefore, I've never read a novel by Stephen King.
I've only read one.
Oh! So, you read the book, right? Have you read the book?
The audio book that we have is great, too. Campbell Scott narrates it.
Yeah, narrates.
If you're more an
audiobook.
Does
a good job, too.
And you guys are cool with the movie?
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think Stanley Kubrick has such a really specific vision. It's like he's going to own anything that's his. So the only part that I thought was like weak is like the big part that was probably, I have a feeling it's like a translation of the apocalypse part in the book, is when it's like cutting, when the blood through the elevators is amazing. But then when it cuts to the skeletons, like what the hotel really looks like now, maybe not in the minds of the characters, like with all the cobwebs, I just think that's a little hokey. That never worked for me. Like, that's my own. The Shining is an amazing movie. I love it. You know, I don't care what Stephen King fans think. I love The Shining. But that's that one. If it has one little flaw, it's those that final scene at the end, that big sort of like collage at the end.
Mm-hmm. I'll bring it up because I remember happening during this time, and I was really a big fan of The Shining, telling people how much I enjoyed it. But, well, I shouldn't say this. Yeah, I am. Every redneck that I knew said, no, it sucked. Let's go see Friday the 13th. And that came out the same year and at the same time. And Friday was a successful. Probably was a little more successful because that was such a cheap film to make. Mm-hmm. But that was a favorite for all the rednecks, to put it bluntly. But if you want a little bit more substance, I think The Shining fits the bill.
Radical.
And you can watch The Shining over and over again. You've sort of been there, done that.
Oh, yeah,
Friday.
I know, right?
Isn't there a little documentary, the making of that movie? Or there's a Kubrick documentary where there's some footage of him?
Her daughter, Vivian, has made a... And it's on the DVD.
I was going to say, I thought it was an extra.
It's kind of rare seeing... You get to see Kubrick mad at Shelley Duvall.
Poor Shelley.
Jack Nicholson. It does reveal... What I liked about it reveals working habits of Nicholson. He was underscoring all his lines, and he said he learned this from Boris Karloff. And it was just a neat little moment in the movie. He's underscoring. He said he saw Boris Karloff do this, and so he did the same thing when they worked on... Well, they worked on a couple of movies together. The Raven was one.
A book that's stuff about stuff, that's what it's like to work with Stanley Kubrick, was a... Frederick Raphael, who wrote the screenplay for Eyes Wide Shut, he wrote a book that was basically published his diaries of what it was like writing that screenplay with Stanley Kubrick. It's interesting if you like Stanley Kubrick. And then also Frederick Raphael's writing style is very old world European, and it's a literary experience. I'm just reading things like, this is your diary? I'm a redneck. This guy's pretty smart. So, pretty smart. He's very eloquent. He's very eloquent. Even like just him thoughts at the end of the day were very eloquent and articulate. But I feel like too, and I know that this is one of the things that Mike isn't here today. But one of the things that he was going to talk about was this guy on YouTube named Rob Ager, who does film analysis and. Kind of the film analysis that I think you're going to see if you go see Room 237. But he also does a few episodes on The Shining. And there's the mixture of, like, I would say film criticism and conspiracy theories about movies. And, like, there are these really interesting mix of fun stuff that's, like, just crazy and then also, like, really serious, insightful stuff. Like, so when you watch it, it's like, oh, yeah, I never thought about it that way. But then some of it's like, oh, man, I'm just, what are you talking about, man? You need to go on a date. But his name's Rob Ager, is A-G-R, and he actually has two YouTube channels because he's got so many DCMA takedown notices, even though he's an academic and he teaches at a college. So at one point, he actually had to start a separate channel just to let YouTube put his movies back up. But I think he worked it out because both his channels are still up now, and I'll link to both of them. And I was going to mention him... Because he does, like I said, he does one about, all the conspiracy theories and his theories about The Shining. And it was funny because we were prepping for the podcast and Mike was like, yeah, I started watching his YouTube channel too. And those of folks who are listening and are really obsessed with the library, in the long comment thread that at least me and Clint got into talking about Prometheus, I had linked to Rob Ager's analysis of the first Alien movie, which was really, really good. But then it got deleted when we migrated the blog to a different server. So, but I'm throwing out some major love to all of Rob's movies, or his YouTube videos. So.
Oh, there's another film I'd like to mention. Since we're on Kubrick, you might be able to see it on YouTube. Some of it's called Kubrick Boxes. It's a film after that Kubrick passed away, and he kept everything. And he had these special boxes made with scripts, and it's just them going through letters, videotapes that he made. They found some great outtakes of the making of Full Metal Jacket. I don't think the library has it, but, you know, if you have IFC or Sundance, that's where I first saw it. I highly recommend it. So, and it has these kids who made, who were mad at him for making The Shining, and I think it was that. They dressed these kids. They had one guy dressed up like Kubrick and another one dressed up like Alex beating up Kubrick, and they sent the tape to Kubrick.
And he kept it.
And they found the guy's house, and they found him, and the guy was just blown away. You mean he watched my film? Stanley Kubrick watched my film? So it's just, you know, it's a fun film to look at.
I bet Stanley Kubrick loved that, too.
Yeah, as paranoid as he was.
The Stanley Kubrick that I know probably like hid for a week and never left his house for a week when he saw that because he was afraid he was going to get attacked. But since we're riffing on Kubrick, you know, the other movie, the movie that I thought you were going to mention was Color Me Kubrick, where John Malkovich plays a guy who pretends to be Kubrick, right?
Right.
And that's based on a true story, right?
Right, yes. Vanity Fair did a big piece about that.
Yeah.
That's when I first read about it. And the guy looks nothing like Kubrick, knew nothing about his films, but he just managed to pull off this great con.
And the library used to have that movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So.
Now, Tickle My Fancy, which is what we tell you what we're into, we're excited about. Maybe the library doesn't have it. Maybe the library does. I'm sure the library has something that relates to it. But this is what is, like, tickling our pop culture fancy this month.
Okay, Tickling My Fancy is a book I'm planning on reading. It's called The Good Nurse. Well, let me go back. The full title is The Good Nurse, A True Story of Medicine, Madness, and Murder.
Yes.
I was listening to NPR. And the author of The Good Nurse, Charles Graber, was on Fresh Air. And it's a book about Charles Cullen. Now, this is not the Charles Cullen from the teen vampire novels. Aww. This is Charles Cullen, a true story. He was a registered nurse who became implicated in over 300 deaths in hospitals he worked at.
Because he was a vampire, right?
And he was a serial killer and mixing meds with the patients. And what's fascinating about the story is how the medical establishment let Charles Cullen get away with it for so long. The Good Nurse, it's a true story of medicine, madness, and murder by Charles Graber. And I was just, the NPR interview was so fascinating that it was just about, the book goes into not only the killer, but why it took so long and how he was able to get away with this for over 16 years and go to various hospitals, I think like 9 hospitals in Pennsylvania. The interview was fascinating, and it was fascinating enough for me to want to read this book, which we have, and you can put it on hold. Amanda, Tickling Your Fancy.
My fiance has been getting me to listen to The Kane Show. It's a morning radio talk show out of Washington, D.C. Actually, they have music, too. But if you listen to it online, you just get the talk segments. They cut out all the music probably for licensing purposes. So Kane is the main guy. He's there with intern John. There's a couple of ladies that sit there. They pull bits. They do what's called War of the Roses, where they try to catch cheaters. They also do Kane scams, where people tell them to call their friends and lie about whatever they're doing, and it's fairly hilarious. But my favorite part of The Kane Show is I was listening today, and intern John is a very huge fan of the movie Pitch Perfect, which Brian was giving me a hard time about for posting during Oscar season.
we'll get back to that.
But they found out today that they're going to make a sequel to the movie Pitch Perfect. So intern John is excited. So am I. If you want to listen, you can catch The Kane Show at iHeartKaneShow.com. And that's what's tickling my fancy right now.
So Pitch Perfect.
Brian loves it. He's a closet Pitch Perfect fan.
I didn't watch the movie because I don't think it's my kind of movie. But the reason I brought it up was your hook in that review was actually really funny, right? It was like a really funny hook because you were like picking on the Oscars.
And I hadn't seen any of them.
And I was like, why did she say that in the podcast? So not anything about that movie. I was like, come on, that's podcast fodder. I want this in the show.
Okay. I saved it for today. Okay. So now they're going to make a sequel, so we could talk about that when it comes out.
Yeah, I read about that.
Yeah, it's exciting.
All right. Now I've got Stage fright. Okay. Tickling my fancy is Hannibal, the new series on NBC created by Brian Fuller, whom you may know from Pushing Daisies, Dead Like Me, Wonder Falls. It's based on Thomas Harris's book Red Dragon. And this show is so awesome, I can't hardly tell you the ways. It looks like a cable series. It's so stylish and slick. The background music is creepy. Each episode has an homage to one of Fuller's favorite horror movies. There's been two episodes aired so far at the time of our taping today. The first included a scene from The Shining, which we've already talked about, the bathroom scene. And the second episode featured a big shout-out to one of my favorites from the 80s, Motel Hell. Mads Mikkelsen can't beat Anthony Hopkins, but he delivers a pretty skin-crawling portrayal of Lecter that runs a close second. And Hugh Dancy matches Mikkelsen's intensity as Special Agent Will Graham. If you're on Twitter, you follow Brian Fuller. He'll give you all the little inside scoops. And so, yeah, please watch it because I want more shows like this to stay on the air. All right, Brian.
You're into The Killing. Like Stephen King. You got all excited when...
Gonna exercise my demons.
Bill was like an evil nurse who kills people.
She went all Beavis.
She was like, yeah. Right,
you should have ended it with saying bon appetit.
I should have. I missed.
Oh, start over.
How many episodes will Hannibal get in before it's canceled? That's the question.
I think they've scheduled it out for a 3-year run.
Well, you know how it goes. If it's good, it's going to get canceled on a network.
Great crossover. Dexter comes and kills him. Oh, no. Maybe that's terrible. Maybe that's terrible. That's the awfulest crossover ever.
I love it, though.
Yeah.
Hey.
Alien versus Predator.
That will be the best YouTube fan mashup ever before it gets a DCMA takedown, right? So, anyway. Okay. So, was it Tickling My Fancy?
I just got Hannibal would eat.
Hannibal
Dexter,
would eat Dexter. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. Well, that'd be a great twist, right? Dexter's like, hey, I'm going to kill you. And then it's like, no, I'm going to eat your liver now.
Yeah, Dexter's won so many times.
It's a nice Chianti.
Like amateur. We are all into killing, aren't we?
We got dark. We got dark today.
Bloodthirsty bunch.
It's a good May. Yeah.
I guess the whole premise for the show was a documentary about The Shining, right? Mm-hmm. So, but what's tickling my fancy is Alex Cox had a Kickstarter to make a film version of Build a Galactic Hero, and he got funded today or yesterday. He made
Did he get it?
Yeah, he got it.
It was like $10,000 when I checked last night.
And he got it.
Really?
Today. I checked it today before the show, and he had reached the goal. And that's really cool. Alex Cox directed Repo Man and Sid and Nancy and Walker, which is probably a great movie that not enough people have seen. And he's a really cool director. He was friends with Harry Harrison, who wrote the novel, or the Build a Galactic Hero. And it's just Build a Galactic Hero is a satirical parody of military sci-fi books, right? And I think it was written in direct response to Starship Troopers. And Harry Harrison and Robert Heinlein used to be friends until Harry Harrison wrote Build a Galactic Hero. And then, but Harry Harrison was also friends with Alex Cox, and they had planned to make this movie for a long time, and they never could. And now Alex has funding to do it. And it's really cool, and I'll link to the Kickstarter.
Yay, Kickstarter.
You've been listening to the Popmatic Podcast.
Thanks.
And it was a killer.
It was a killer episode.
And for more information...
www.
Thank you, Crystal.
Library.
Dot Nashville.
Dot.
Org.
That's my favorite part, org. For more information, just Google things.
Yeah, I like
See, when I say that, you say, you know you can bling it, too.
All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.